Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Adani Green Energy Q4 FY24 earnings call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Heenal Choudhary. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you, Sagar. Good evening. On behalf of Investec, we welcome you all to Q4 FY24 and FY24 earnings call from Adani Green Energy. Today we have with us from the management Mr. Sagar Adani, Executive Director, Mr. Amit Singh, CEO, Mr. Kunsukh Wangyal, CFO, Mr. Rajkumar Jain, Head Business Development, and Mr. Veeral Rawal, Head IR. I now hand over to management for opening remarks followed by Q&A. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you very much, Heenal, for organizing the call. Good afternoon, morning to everyone from all across. It's a pleasure to connect with all of you and walk you through. We'll just give you a brief update on AGEL results and then open up for Q&A right after. This is Sagar Adani, and I'll just start. So Adani Green Energy is India's first and the fastest renewable player to get to a 10.9 GW of operating capacity. It is a testament to our focus on project execution, operational excellence, building resilient supply chains, innovation, and leveraging technology to enable affordable and renewable power. In FY24, we strengthened our market leadership with 2,848 MW of greenfield capacity addition, which marks a 35% year-on-year increase. The capacity addition by Adani Green alone accounts for over 15% of India's total renewable capacity addition in FY24. We are developing the world's largest single-location renewable energy plant of 30,000 MW in Khavda. This project will set a blueprint for ultra-large-scale renewable energy development globally. The project is spread across 538 sq km, almost five times the city of Paris, and will be completed fully by 2029. In fact, in the same location, we have already operationalized 2 GW of solar capacity in FY24 just within 12 months of breaking ground there. I'm glad to share that in FY24, we delivered a robust performance across all metrics on a year-on-year basis. Our revenue from power supply increased by 33% to rupees 7,735 crores. Our EBITDA increased by 30% to rupees 7,222 crores. The run rate EBITDA stands at a strong rupees 10,462 crores. The net debt to run rate EBITDA is at 4x compared to 5.4x just one year ago. Cash profit has increased by 25% to rupees 3,986 crores. Our consistently high operational performance has enabled us to deliver an industry-leading EBITDA margin of 92%. Our investors have also reposed tremendous faith in our strategic vision. AGEL has further strengthened ties with strategic partners and investors, including TotalEnergies, GQG Partners, and Qatar Investment Authority. We have also refinanced Restricted Group One bond with a fresh 18-year bond issuance of $409 million, which was oversubscribed 6.5 times. Our continued focus on improving performance across ESG parameters has significantly advanced our rankings and ratings by globally recognized independent bodies. In its latest assessment, ISS ESG ranked AGEL first in Asia and amongst top five in the RE sector globally. CDP rated AGEL in the topmost category of A for supplier engagement and A- in the climate change assessment. India's green power revolution is underway at a very accelerated pace. This necessitates developing utility-scale storage projects in a speedy and cost-effective manner to support the baseload requirements of the country and to complement the higher capacity of renewables coming into the grid. Pumped hydro storage, a mature and proven technology, emerges as a robust solution. We are targeting at Adani Green an addition of at least 5 gigawatts of pumped hydro storage capacity by 2030 and have already kicked off construction work for the first 500 megawatt project in Andhra Pradesh. With this, we have revised our renewable energy capacity target for 2030 upwards from 45 gigawatts to now 50 gigawatts. 100% of this capacity is already fully funded from both a debt and equity perspective. We are on track to achieve the 2030 target with locked in land parcels and transmission connectivity in Rajasthan and Gujarat. We also have a development pipeline for pump storage projects across 4 states in India. We are committed to lead India's energy transition and we aim to more than double our greenfield capacity addition to 6,000 megawatts in the current fiscal year. Thank you very much and we'll open up for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and 1. To ask a question. Our first question is from the line of Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good evening, sir. And congratulations on a very, very good set of numbers. So the first question is on the, how to think about the capacity addition beyond 20 gigawatt. If I understand correctly, you've got 20 gigawatt locked in PPA. But I don't think we are bidding right now. We're not participating in any of the bids.
So, Mohit, yes, you're right. We have 20 gigawatts of locked-in PPAs. We are also actively pursuing C&I customers, specifically high-rated counterparties for C&I and various other Adani Group companies as well, which would require power for their own decarbonization requirements over the next few months and years. So at in due course, when relevant contracts are signed, we will update to the market. But at the same time, we will ensure that we will make sure that in the next 2 odd years, to till now, we have the full lock-in and we're executing contracts which have tied up counterparties. In the next 2 years, you will see significantly higher locked-in contracts, which will be of a similar nature, of a similar number, that we will execute across various counterparties, as well as participate in specific value-added tenders, because we want to make sure that we don't participate in, you know, with, in the context of the energy demand of the country right now. There is various opportunities that are very attractive. We don't want to participate in simple plain vanilla PPAs, which wherein the returns wouldn't be as attractive as what we would be able to get otherwise. So we're pursuing a lot of alternate options at an appropriate point in time when things are locked in. We'll disclose to the market, but the underlying theme remains that at higher margins and at higher profitabilities, we will look to lock in capacities with various counterparties consistently as we go forward.
Does it mean that you'll not participate in the upcoming SECI bids of hybrid or storage, anything? Is that right understanding?
So from a storage, etc. point of view, we may look at specific bids on an opportunistic basis. It's not that we just absolutely won't participate or that we will participate for every single one of them. We will look at it on a very tactical basis, looking at, you know, the capacity that we have available, because we're executing a run rate of about 6,000 megawatts of greenfield capacity addition every year. Somewhere between, in future years as well, we should look at executing somewhere between 6 to 8,000 megawatts every year of new capacity that we will have available. So what we want to look at and lock in is, out of the 6 gigawatts that we will physically construct, how much of that do we want to allocate to PPAs? How much of it do we want to allocate to C&I customers, high-paying, high-credit counterparties? How much do we allocate for various other Adani Group companies for the decarbonization requirements? So we have that thing that we look at on a little bit of a tactical basis, depending on the various factors in a particular year. But from a capacity addition perspective, we would add a capacity of somewhere between 6 to 8,000 megawatts on a run rate basis going forward.
Yeah. I'm good. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, sir. My last question, how do you bifurcate the land allotted in Khavda between various group companies? Thank you. Yeah, that's it.
We don't bifurcate any land to any of the group companies. We just, Adani Green owns the land and Adani Green executes the project on that land. From a counterparty perspective, that's what I just said, right? From a Adani Green prepares the project, sets the project up and sells electricity to various other companies. So in that sense, in that particular year, depending on again the project mix, it depends on which group company gets how much in terms of power capacity.
Thank you. Just a reminder to all the participants, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Nikhil from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question and congratulations on a good set of numbers. My first question is on the guidance that we can expect for the commissioning of new capacity in the coming fiscal 25 and fiscal 26, if you could please share that.
So as I said, Nikhil, we will be in this coming year, we will plan to add at least about 6,000 megawatts of greenfield capacity in FY25. In FY26, we should have a similar or a slightly higher number, but it should be in a similar range, as I said earlier as well. We aim to execute a greenfield capacity of somewhere between 6 to 8,000 megawatts in a given year. So our land tie-ups, our evacuation tie-ups, our execution capacity, vendor participation, our financial plan is all ramped up to be able to deliver a capacity of somewhere between 6 to 8,000 megawatts in a year. This year, our target is north of 6,000 megawatts.
Perfect. Understood. If I may ask a follow-up to that, do you see any challenges coming in from availability of equipments, whether it be panels due to ALMM or, you know, transmission equipments like transformers, which we are hearing a constraint across the board? Do you foresee any of those challenges coming in for you?
For us specifically, we will not have any of those challenges.
Understood. And even evacuation from a grid standpoint from Khavda, that's...
would also not be a problem. So when we talk about the target and the plan to add 6,000 megawatts of capacity, that we do ourselves consider every one of these factors in terms of the supply chain, in terms of the evacuation, in terms of the capital availability, in terms of the organizational capability. We factor in all of those things and then disclose our own internal target to the market.
Great, makes sense. Then the second question I had was regarding, I think this was alluded to a bit earlier as well. So we understand you've got a very big pipeline to commission, hence possibly missing from the tenders last year. But there were also some very good complex tenders which happened, FDRE tenders, which seemed at very good prices, giving good returns. Was the reason to not participate in them a strategic one that you expect more such and possibly more attractive opportunities to come? Or was it a factor of the timeline of the pump storage plant coming in 2027 and that's something that you would want to work, the project commissioning to align with that?
Nikhil, good question. From our side, basically what we see, we are not very, very hung up by one particular tender of SECI. What we're playing is a much larger strategic renewable energy game in the context of the Indian market. Now, there is one, there'll probably be 10 other tenders that will come. When we look at, you just take a step back and look at it from a thematic perspective. From an India standpoint, India currently is already expecting a huge growth of consumption from an energy perspective. Now, of course, we all want to make sure that a majority of that chunk is serviced by renewable energy capacity. If you just put in that context a number of what the physical commissioning that would require to service that demand, incremental demand every year, the number is pretty staggering. So one bid or a couple of bids here or there is not very important. What is important for us is we build our capacity, we build our portfolio of generation, be that solar capacity, wind capacity, pumped hydro, all of that up in such a way that we have a very unique set of solutions for the end customer. Now, the conduit of reaching the end customer could be via SECI bid, could be via an NTPC bid, could be via many different ways, could be a bilateral contract, could be, you know, some DISCOM bids that may come out, state-level DISCOM bids that may come out. But ultimately, what we want to ensure is we build the AGEL portfolio up in such a way that the expected demand profile of the country over the next 5 years is able to be met in a very significant way by our product portfolio. So that's how we're thinking about it. Now, if we are in a position to be able to provide capacity and products and services which other renewable energy companies cannot, we expect there to be a significant margin in delta that we'd be able to make because of that one particular thing. Does that help you answer your question?
It does. And what I took away is that you have the potential in awaiting patiently. You expect more such opportunities to come, given the scale of supply that's needed, as you said, for the transition.
Correct. Because we're in a very unique position, Nikhil, to have the ability to not, unlike most other companies, right, where balance sheet capacity of AGEL, group strength, to be able to build projects without necessarily need of specific contracts. To have the financial capability to build looking forward to the contracts, not build only after contracts are in place. Because that, and then that differentiator gives us a delta of additional profitability significantly. Because we don't have to compete where 20 other people are already.
Makes sense. And if I may ask a related point, similarly on pump storage, then I'm guessing there is no PPA because there hasn't been many tenders. But the plan would be, again, like you said, depending on what opportunities come your way, what could be the best return, that's how you want to lock it. And capital is not a constraint.
Correct. So when we are looking at pumped hydro, Nikhil, in a way that it's a strategic alternative to batteries, there are going to be tenders that are going to come in which will require deployment of batteries for ensuring that there's a much more committed supply profile that can be committed to the counterparties. Now, for most of the other people, if you want to achieve that level of kind of specificity, you have no choice but to go for batteries, which is how a lot of recent tenders have come up from SECI and other counterparties as well. Ultimately, what batteries are doing is providing storage. The same thing can be done by pumped hydro storage as well, which is significantly cheaper to build compared to batteries. So what we're doing is we're having a strategic option by creating a pumped hydro storage project where we will be able to, I mean, if it's, let's say, 30%, just using a broad number, cheaper compared to a lithium ion battery storage plant, then that is immediate delta available for us in terms of how we can price this, because the alternative for that would be a lithium ion battery storage option, which would be significantly more expensive for someone else to make. So this becomes our, you know, significant margin as far as that option is concerned. So that's why we want to build and retain this option to ourselves.
Got it. Makes sense. If I may ask one more question, there was a point made earlier that the 50 gigawatt aspiration, which I think is great and we also clearly need it in India, but it's fully funded. But when we do the math, at least from the equity standpoint, we see a need for equity raise to reach that kind of scale, assuming we are not divesting assets, which I think is not the plan. So Just wanted some clarification on that one, because 50 gigawatts, the equity requirement would be quite substantial. So without any additional fundraise, you see the ability to fund it from existing operating cash flows?
To your point, Nikhil, we've done the math and we've done all the considerations, the simulations for everything to get to the number that we've publicly declared of 50,000 megawatts by 2030. From a debt perspective, of course, we have construction facilities tied up. We have a very deep access to the Indian markets. And basically, with the amount of capacities that we already have tied up today in terms of revolving facilities, we more or less get to that that number, because it gets churned and recycled every year. So we get to that number broadly. From an equity perspective, the internal accruals that the company makes and the commitment that the promoters have made by way of subscription of warrants into Adani Green, both of those things put together ensure that 100% of the equity requirements are fully funded to get to 50 gigawatts.
Understood. Maybe just one last question, if I can squeeze in on the merchant power side. So good to see the increase in merchant exposure in the future portfolio to 10% and the under construction 11 gigawatts. But also, do you see a risk to that, given, you know, globally solar power prices are becoming negative?
So Nikhil, India is a very, very different animal and a very different set of considerations compared to many other places in the world. So it would be very wrong to kind of borrow off from specific commercial experiences in other places in the world versus what the situation in India is. So I'll say that. So that's number one. Second, if you still look at the deficit that India has overall in terms of requirement at the peak, because solar generates in the wind, you know, India from a climate perspective is a summer country. So the peak demand and the peak requirement comes in many places through the summer and many other months through the in the afternoon. So solar actually in that sense, unlike many other Western countries, is perfectly complementary to the demand of the India grid. That's number one. Second, if we look at again just very, very, very conservative simulations in terms of what will be the requirement of additional capacity of power in the afternoons, in the evenings, which solar and wind very beautifully complement, there is a very, very significant shortage that is expected to come up over the next 2, 3, 4 years. Even if you look at current year numbers, if in terms of energy growth, what is expected to be even higher next year and the years forward, if you take a 5-year simulation, the numbers are very, very, very staggering in terms of what India would require. So from that perspective, we don't see as many PPAs and ties up happening by the DISCOMs, by the various other agencies and companies to cater for that increase in demand. So we see a very clear 3 to 4 year runway where we'd be able to make substantially better margins if we have additional capacities that are catered towards the merchant market. While I say this, at the same time, we also will continue to ensure that we look for very specific, profitable, not plain vanilla opportunities where we are able to make higher deltas in terms of our profitability. And at the right and appropriate point in time, we will be very open and we will be very willing to tie up these capacities in long-term PPAs as well. So we always keep an eye out and we keep a lookout for that. But at the same time, want to also ensure that we use shorter-term opportunities to generate better profitability for the portfolio.
Makes sense. Thank you so much for answering my questions and congrats again for great execution. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ketan Jain from Avendus Spark. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. I just had a follow-up question on a question previously asked on battery storage. With the fall in battery prices, are we looking to add any battery storage-based hybrid projects? And also, with the fall in prices, does the tariff get competitive with pump storage? Like, how does the tariff of both projects compare?
The right way to look at it, Ketan, is that there is going to be, there is a demand, right, on one end. That one end is a demand in terms of what is the amount of power required at one what point in time. So the tender always asks for demand. does the tender never or a consumer never asks for a specific source of power. So on one hand is the demand, which is the bids that are coming from SECI, which is the bid coming from all of these different VFC and I opportunities and the likes. On the other hand, we as generators and, you know, Adani Green and many of the other companies, we have to decide what are the sources of power through which we want to cater to this demand. Now, in many of the cases, people cater to this demand by way of battery storage. That's the majority of what people are doing, and that's the majority of how things have happened all across the world as well. From an Indian context, we have an additional source of power, a generating source of power, that is pumped hydro. Pumped hydro, because of the way the industry works and because of the way concessions work in India, is not battery storage. You know, it's very easy. You buy a bunch of batteries, you put them, you link them to your solar plant, and you have this capability of providing renewable power with storage capability as well. So there's much, much lesser barriers to entry. On the other hand, pumped hydro is sort of like a full-fledged infrastructure project. It's not as easy and simple to execute as a battery storage project. But at the same time, pumped hydro is much cheaper. So what we always ensure and what we want to make sure is that we have a bouquet of solutions that are available for consumption of our end customer. At the same time, from a generating perspective, we are able to generate this solution at the cheapest possible rate in the market. That's how we look at it. So there is a role that pumped hydro storage plays as well. There is a role that battery plays. There is a role that solar and wind plays. There is a role that every one of these generating sources play. But what we want to ensure is we have access to these generating sources in a way that is cheapest, so that we can generate the highest margin for the same tariff in the market.
Understood. I just want to understand that, so you're saying India will need a combination of both type of projects, like there's not one particular storage to be chosen from. And even if you compare on a standalone basis, just the battery and this pump, batteries tariff are to be higher, right? Like, am I right?
That is correct, yes.
And India needs a combination of both, like both are required based on the demand.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, in order to join the question queue, please press star and one on your touchtone phone now. The next question is from the line of Apoorva Bahadur from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, Sagar. Thanks for the opportunity. Sagar, wanted to check up on these pump storage projects that we are building. What could be the timeline for commissioning over there?
So for FY27, Apoorva is the first commissioning plan for the 500 megawatts that we're executing currently. Of course, as we go along, we look at about a 3 to 3.5 year timeline for commissioning of a standard pump storage project. So whenever we start additional projects somewhere along the way over the next 1 or 2 years, those projects will get ready in about 3 to 3.5 years of when construction is started, from a thumb rule perspective.
Understood. And what would be the tentative capital costs on a per megawatt basis that we are looking at?
So we are looking at about 4.5 to 5 crores per megawatt.
Understood. So in that case, these will be quite competitive on the cost curve. Fair enough. I think a large part of our sort of strategy of utilizing pump storage also rests on transmission availability. And I recollect you said that all this is taken into consideration. But
correct. Absolutely.
Do you think? Yeah. Would we require more transmission? I mean, from a planning perspective.
So, Apoorva, so if that's a question, that's an overall India question, that does India require more transmission capacity from a planning perspective, answer is yes. So the government recognizes that very well also, and the government also ensures that there is a very proactive planning of transmission that is happening in advance of the projects getting ready. So you'll see, I think this year we should expect a lot of transmission bids and transmission capacity is expected to be bid out by the government to ensure that all the major renewable generating areas are newly well connected in advance of the projects becoming ready, so that when the projects are ready, they can immediately evacuate into the grid of the country. When we look at the pumped hydro projects, they're of course in geographies which have a certain type of a topography. So sometimes it becomes slightly more challenging, but whenever we do plan this on our end, we never ever do we plan a single project without 100% certainty in terms of transmission. Because we never want to be in a situation where a project is ready and it becomes a dead asset because it cannot evacuate. So transmission becomes a very core part of our project planning. It's in fact the most important, and which is why you would have seen in the last 6-7 year history, never has it once been that a project of ours has been ready and has been stranded because of lack of transmission capacity. That's something we evaluate very carefully, and we make sure that is in place significantly in advance of our projects becoming ready. We time it like that.
That's for sure what we have been seeing. So I think yeah, that's you're absolutely right. I think last two questions, and I believe like into one of the questions earlier, you had said like the idea is to sort of meet India's energy demand, right, irrespective of the source and the procedure. Continuing on that theme, should we expect any foray on the rooftop side now that the government is pushing for it, right, especially under the RESCO model?
So Adani Green, Apurva, is a platform that is focused on setting up dedicated utility scale, large scale solar and wind projects, of course with storage solutions as well, pumped hydro, battery storage. So we will continue to remain in that segment. We don't want to go into a kilowatt level segment. That is something that does not make sense for us. It is left much better to other companies who want to execute that. For us, our focus is and will continue to remain large utility scale development of large scale renewable projects.
Great. I think last question. If you can share the latest capital cost estimates for solar and wind on a per megawatt basis, what you're seeing now?
Sorry, the line for the management has been dropped. Please stay connected while we reconnect the management back. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the management line connected back. So you can please go ahead. Apurva, sir,
Yes. I just wanted to check on the capital cost for solar and wind, the latest number. And Sagar, one more question. I think this is regarding your assessment of maybe requirement for wind capacity addition, right? Now, once the pump storage projects start getting commissioned, because I understand that solar would be the cheapest way to sort of charge them, right? So do you require, do you think that surplus wind capacity addition would be required once pump storage solutions start commissioning? And if yes, to what extent?
So I think from a charging the pump storage plants perspective, it is, see, if you have, again, from a thumb rule perspective, if you have wind capacity, it is best used because it generates very well at peak hours, peak consumption hours. So if you have wind capacity, it is best to sell it into the grid at the time of peak consumption hours, because that's where you make a, you know, quite significant in terms of delta. What you would typically want to do is utilize the excess solar energy generated during the day to charge your pump storage plant. So that's the logical way in which you would typically want to do that from an economics perspective. Now, will we need to add additional wind? Not specifically from a pump storage perspective, but from an overall country demand perspective and demand profile perspective, absolutely. The more that the wind is added in terms of jointly together with solar, the better it is from a grid stability perspective.
Okay. Fair enough. Understood. First of all, basically for charging pump storage, it is not required. So the current, say, sort of trend of overbuilding wind to ensure that a lot of tenders, we are matching the demand curve, right? So that trend should ideally end with maybe pump storage costs acting as a cap over there. Is my understanding correct?
No, I wouldn't say that we would be. I mean, if you ask me, my personal view would be that we are significantly underbuilding the wind capacity. So, in fact, across the board, all developers from a country perspective as well, we need to ensure a significantly higher development of wind capacity versus solar capacity. Of course, it's a little more challenging from an execution perspective, from an operations perspective, so people have a little more hesitation compared to that. It's, of course, from a resource perspective as well, a little less predictable compared to solar. But the times at which it generates is very complementary to what India's demand needs are. So again, from a pump storage perspective, I don't think there is that much. I think solar will be the source that will charge a pumped hydro plant. So wind is not very relevant from a pump storage perspective. But again, from a country perspective, wind becomes absolutely critical and essential.
No, I'm just asking from a levelized cost of electricity perspective, right? Because solar will obviously be much cheaper than wind. Now, can we overbuild or does it make sense sort of have so much of pump storage? And if it sort of based on your cost estimates, does it make sense to sort of overbuild solar along with pump storage from a levelized cost of energy perspective, or does it still make sense to sort of go for wind as well?
No, so short answer, Apurva, to your question is that ultimately, there's going to be a mix of solar and wind that is going to support all different sources. So predominantly, hydro, pumped hydro is going to be charged by solar, mainly because from a levelized cost perspective, it's the cheapest. So that's what we will all endeavor to do completely. But of course, from a timing perspective, sometimes if wind is required, yes, you would want to build that.
Absolutely. No, I understood that. If you can just help us with the capital cost for solar and wind that you're seeing now.
Solar, we look at capital cost somewhere around 5 crores per megawatt. And wind is approximately 6.5.
This 5 crore per megawatt is at what DC ratio?
That would be at about 1.35 odd AC-DC ratio.
Okay, so this is inclusive of all the BCDs and basically domestic modules, right? Post-ILMM?
Yes. This would be inclusive. I mean, of course, these numbers change significantly because market modules are like a commodity. You know, they change every quarter in terms of pricing. So I'm just giving you a rough thumb rule estimate. Of course, the specific numbers can keep changing as per how the global market evolves and the domestic market evolves as well.
Perfect. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the question again. I had a couple of more questions. So one is, is there any plan to use the planned renewable capacity to power the green hydrogen projects of group entities?
Right now, Adani Green's focus is not green hydrogen. Adani Green has its own independent focus of delivering 50 gigawatts by 2030. That will mainly be used in government counterparty projects, SECI, NTPC, state government DISCOMs, some other decarbonization plans of some other group companies to make sure that there's some, for C&I, for third parties, the likes of large IT companies which consume significant amount of power, data center consumption loads. So mainly these would be the places where Adani Green would focus on right now. Currently, we don't have a plan to allocate a significant amount of capacity for green hydrogen from an Adani Green perspective.
And if I may then, so this is helpful. Just the other question which came earlier on the solar project costing 5 crores per megawatt. Just wanted to understand what are the module prices you are seeing post-JLMM in the domestic market, because I'm expecting it to be a lower number given globally prices are 11 cents.
So there's a lot of 11 cents, but there's a BCD, right? There's about a 40% BCD on importing modules into India. So the actual fair prices from an India standpoint is something around the range of 17 to 17.5 cents. So that's more of what the cost of imported modules in India would be today, even if you consider 11 cents. But independently, there's from a domestic market perspective, see, again, prices vary significantly because it depends from what tenders. The latest tenders that have been opened by SECI and NTPC have had a price of somewhere around 24 cents, I think, for domestic modules. So that's around the price range in which domestic modules are available because there's a shortage, right? There's a demand supply mismatch. We do, of course, expect a significant amount of capacity addition happening in the module and cell market for domestic manufacturing capacity to increase significantly over the next year, year and a half to almost 2 years. So that number should inch towards a downward trajectory. So it should compress, but I think it's more of a temporary issue.
Got it, understood. But you won't be able to import the modules right now post 1st April. You would have to rely on domestic, or am I wrong to understand?
So there's a lot of contractual and regulatory nuances to this answer. There's certain tenders and projects which are exempt from this condition because they were bidded before the ALMM condition came in force. So those projects under those tenders are exempt from ALMM requirements, so you can import. There are certain projects where you can... So for those projects, you have to use ALMM compliant modules. They are not necessarily domestic. ALMM can also be granted to a foreign exporter. Some factories, for example, exporting from Singapore, Malaysia, who, as we understand, have actively applied for ALMM approvals from the government. It's yet to be seen if they're able to achieve it, or if the government grants them the approval, doesn't grant them the approval. So there's a lot of moving parts to this. But I mean, I'll try to answer this from Adani Green perspective. From an Adani Green perspective, everything we're executing this year is fully locked in and de-risked from an ALMM perspective. So everything, all the modules that we need for our project.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, the line for the chairperson seems to have dropped again. Please stay connected while we reconnect the management back.
Hello?
Yes, sir, we have you back. So ladies and gentlemen, Hi. We have the management back. Sorry for that, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know what you heard me last, but I think basically from Adani Green perspective, we are fully locked in for whatever we require for the upcoming year.
Makes sense. So the 8 gigawatt big project on solar side, that I'm guessing doesn't fall under ALMM.
It does not.
Perfect, understood. And then maybe one last question from bookkeeping standpoint. If you could give me a sense of, you know, last quarter Q4, how much was the merchant power sale revenue for Adani Green?
I think on a portfolio level, that mix will broadly remain the same actually. As you know, right now, out of my 10,934 megawatt, effective merchant capacity, that is where PPA is not yet signed, is nearly 550 megawatt. So that is where from a capacity perspective, that is the
Sorry to interrupt.
If the number is 5%, you assume about a 6.5 to 7% in terms of thumb rule number basis again. But we can get back to you with the exact numbers.
Understood. Cool. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for answering my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants. If you have any questions at this moment, please press star and 1 to ask a question. Participants, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. We have the next question from the line of Heenal from Investec. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Sir, can you just quantify how much CTU connectivity, do we have enough CTU connectivity and sufficient land for the set pipeline?
Short answer is yes.
For the 100% pipeline?
For 100% of the pipeline, yes.
Okay. Also, what is the merchant portfolio contribution right now?
It's about 5% of the portfolio in terms of capacity right now.
And going forward, we are likely to maintain the contribution?
When we say merchant, because it's merchant capacity for some time, but then it's locked into a C&I customer. So then you do have a PPA and a counterparty after some time. So it sometimes becomes a little fungible, but from a simplicity perspective, you can consider a guidance of about 10% in terms of the mix that we would have that is open, where we would sell to merchant and CNI put together.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Uma Menon from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to ask if there was any Infirm power sale that happened last quarter.
No, Uma, I think there is no Infirm power sale. If you may recollect, in the past we have guided actually just to be in line with global best practices. Now what effectively we are doing is as and when plant is charged actually that will get reflected in our P&L. So there is no Infirm power per se.
Got it. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for taking the time out. We're very excited about the journey that AGL has ahead in front of ourselves. And we hope and we look forward to all of your participation and we look forward to engaging very closely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. On behalf of Investec, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.